Next case for argument is 21-2342, Par Pharma v. Eagle Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Black, please proceed.
It pleases the Court. This appeal presents an important doctrinal question that goes to the heart of the nature of proof in ANDA litigation. The District Court in footnote 2 of its opinion stated that it, quote, struggled mightily, unquote, with reconciling this Court's decisions on the use of ANDA specifications and real-world evidence. We agree that the law requires clarification, but disagree with the District Court's approach.
Well, where is the ambiguity here? Do you dispute that the range in the ANDA that they filed is outside of the range in your claims?
No. The paper ANDA that they filed said 3.6 was the top end of their release specification, which is interpreted to mean 3.64.
Okay, so we all agree with that.
That what's in the paper is correct.
Okay, and isn't there case law that says that the framework for ANDA litigation, you presume for purposes of infringement analysis that ANDA filers are bound by the representations in the ANDA?
There is, and there is also case law that says that if there's evidence that despite the representations, a product will infringe, that evidence must be accepted and considered by the District Court. That's in Tyco and Abbott. And that's therein lies the conflict. Because in this case...
Sure. Is this all with regard to your 271E2 argument?
It's regard to both, Your Honor. We put the 271A argument first because it's quite clear under the evidence, we believe, that we're entitled to a judgment, a declaration, that if they sell a product, release the product, at above 3.6, they will infringe. And we put that to make the point that we're entitled to that declaration to avoid the conflict between the ANDA as approved by the FDA now, it's been approved, and the patent rights. We also believe that it follows from that finding, which we believe must be made under the evidence, that we're entitled...
Well, you don't get a declaration that if someone infringes your patent, they will infringe your patent unless you can prove, right, that you're entitled to the DJ by evidence that would suggest that there is a real and imminent threat that they're going to infringe your patent. And in this case, the District Court found that you failed to meet that burden of proof because you couldn't establish any substantial or even insubstantial batches that clearly resulted in the updrift that would cause infringement. So I don't see what the conflict is that you're looking for.
What we proved, Your Honor, is that if they sell a product at above 3.6, these products will turn into infringing products when they go into the market.
No, you didn't. Where did you prove this?
The District Court himself said that the range of variation among the products is 0.05 after release and during the shelf life.
Except that the evidence of record was that they weren't manufacturing batches at 3.6. So the evidence in the record in this case showed that the batches they were manufacturing was typically at the lower end of their range. So even if there is a slight upward drift, they still weren't exceeding the range and falling into your infringing pattern. So it doesn't seem to me you've met your burden of proof.
It depends what the burden of proof is in ANDA cases. Congress, we believe, set up the statute.
Well, wait, there's two different provisions, right? When you say what the burden of proof is, there's what should be your burden of proof to establish a 271E victory.
Correct.
Versus what should be an A victory. So tell me which of those sections your current argument you're about to make is direct.
I think it applies to both, Your Honor. Congress set up the Hatch-Waxman Act to make sure that there would not be conflicts between authorizations issued by the FDA and authorizations and right to exclude issued by the Patent Office. Those two are concentric circles. They should not meet. Congress said we're going to create an artificial act of infringement at the time of the filing of the ANDA because there was substantial doubt and case law saying that that was too early to create declaratory judgment jurisdiction. They said district courts should decide these issues. Will there be a conflict between the ANDA product, between the ANDAs filed, and the issued patent? Here, the ANDA filing, despite the litigation, despite all the focus we've put on the pH above 3.6, Eagle has maintained, requested, and now obtained approval from the FDA to release a product at 3.64. Whether they do so in manufacturing, whether they choose to do so or not, we know not at this point because there's no more discovery in the case and the product is on the market. But the fact of the matter is the FDA approved the release of this product at pH 3.64, And under Synovian, whether or not they decide to exercise that, whether or not they swear to the court that they won't do it, whether they point to other things in their ANDA that they say suggest that that won't happen, is insufficient
and
to prevent
the
conflict.
And you think that applies to 271A. I tried to get you distinguished. You may have an argument with this argument you just made that would fall under 271E. I don't see how that falls under 271A.
Well, I'll stick with 271E then.
No, but do you see my point? Under 271A, the question is, what could they make? The question is, what product?
They can make a product. So I now see your question. Let me try a different way. We established that their in-process release specification takes you up to 3.54. And their witness, their expert, admitted that the variation in between in-process testing and a very short period later release testing can be as high as 0.07, which would take you to 3.61. So it's not completely theoretical to assume that they are going to have a product at that level.
3.61 doesn't infringe.
3.61 is a release. A release number would infringe because of the upward drift after that.
No.
Well, you didn't
prove
the upward drift. They had this whole we had this whole dispute about optimization, and the district court made findings which are susceptible to deferential treatment. And no, I mean, you're saying stuff here as if it's true and proven and established, and it's not. The opposite.
What we proved was limited. I agree. We proved that if they use their internal process specification at 3.54, that there were examples in a limited number of samples that we had that went up 0.7 to 3.61.
And they came
that
back and
interest.
They said, look, we've got this optimization process that precludes that during the shelf life. And the district court looked at the evidence they presented, looked at the evidence you presented, and concluded no. You had not established that there was necessarily, or that there was likelihood of this upward drift. Am I misstating what went down here?
No, Your Honor.
Do you get to relitigate that?
No, we don't. We do not get to relitigate it. He made a finding that there's 0.05 on either side, and that's not enough to establish.
And that's true, right?
And that,
that's correct. They don't come within the range, if it's 3.64, that's still not within the patent claim.
Right, but if they release at 3.64, which they're allowed to do under their ANDA, and this is the 271E argument now, their ANDA permits them to release at 3.64. Their argument that they won't do it is insufficient under Synovian, and the evidence that the district court found that there is variation of 0.05 on either side, that would result in infringement of products in the real world, and on that basis, the product should have been precluded, at least until they amend their ANDA in some fashion, to give up the scope that they asked for. They asked for the...
I thought the 3.64 included that 0.05 thing, not that it's 3.64 and then you get additional...
No, well, the
right?
Their stability, their release specification...
is 3.6.
Which includes 3.64 because of
that. Okay, but you don't then get an extra add-on for that. It's 3.64.
They can release at 3.64. They would be within the ANDA, and that would not infringe. Agreed. However, the record evidence, including the district court's finding, is that this product can float up 0.05, sometimes down, sometimes up. We showed 32 out of 45 times it goes up. And the point is, if they release at 3.64, they're strictly complying with the release specification, but that product will turn into an infringing product in the marketplace. And because they've asked for the authorization...
Well, you just said that product will turn into infringing. And I don't see the findings. I mean, they talked about what's in the specification and the optimization. Didn't the district court conclude that that's not correct, that there's not evidence?
No, my statement is a conditional one. I want to be clear. It's for purposes of the hypothetical ANDA. They asked for the right to release at 3.64. Our position is this. If they do release at 3.64, there was evidence, and the district court even found, that after release, the product will drift. It's unbuffered, that's why. If this product drifts even 0.01 pH units up, it will reach the infringing range. Therefore, the FDA should not have been permitted to approve this product, because under the real-world facts of instability of the pH of this product, it will drift into the infringing range. The district court made no finding on that point, but he did make a finding specifically that there is a 0.05 variation in the product up and down.
You just said that, it's curious, because you just said the FDA should not have been allowed to do this, and there was a citizen petition filed with the FDA that was resoundingly rejected, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so to the extent you're making allegations that you concede are what the, you know, the FDA should have done in the first instance, and you used whatever process you have there, and you lost.
I meant it in this sense, that we're not here challenging the FDA's findings or jurisdiction. Citizen's petition wasn't before the district court. My point is that under the Hatch-Waxman Act, the FDA should have been precluded from approving the ANDA in this format, because that's the purpose of the Hatch-Waxman Act, and 271E says that the time for approval should have been reset until patent expiration. It's a matter of law. That's our main point.
What is the optimization process? What's the impact of the optimization process that they represent that they're going to use have on the drift?
It has no impact at all, because any promises, anything that they say they're going to do is irrelevant if they maintain the right to release a product.
I asked what was the evidence that was introduced about how the optimization process would limit drift?
Okay, so their expert admitted that even with the optimization batches, and we had a limited number of them, that we saw upward drift of up to 0.07 pHs.
Is this Dr. Park?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And he conceded that was true. And the district court did not...
So even with the optimization process, you're saying the evidence of record is that there might be drift up to 0.7, but I believe they said it would center around 0.05, right?
The district court made a finding, which I do think was clearly erroneous, that it would be 0.05 one way or the other, because we had...
Well, I also thought the district court made a finding that they wouldn't release a product at 3.64, because then they would be in danger of violating the stability specification. So what you've been representing here today, all about they're going to release it at 3.64 and the problems with doing that, I thought that was off the table.
What I'm saying is they can't release it above 3.64, and we're not saying they will, because that would result in potential.
Well, no. Maybe I'm wrong, but I have in my notes that the district court found they wouldn't release a product at 3.64 because then they would be in danger of violating the stability specification.
I see your question, Your Honor. And the trouble with that finding is it's legally irrelevant what their intent is. If they've asked the FDA to approve at 3.64, that's synovial. You can't get around what you've asked for in the ANDA by swearing that you won't do it or pointing to other things.
The district court looked at the stability specification, which is part of all of this, and relied on them complying with that.
The stability specification, all it says is that they made a promise that they would test a batch once a year, and if they found a problem, they would go back to the FDA, and the FDA would then address it if they felt there was a safety or efficacy issue.
So you're saying, bottom line is, there's no guarantee of any of this, that they're going to do what they've sworn they're going to do, and what the district court concluded was sufficient to ensure that they were going to do it, and that is not enough.
I will say that it's not on their intent. I take your point. But they have maintained and obtained an FDA approval to release at 3.64. If they don't want to use that authority that they have obtained from the FDA, they need to disclaim it. And they refuse to do that in the district court. Perhaps there's an inference there, but we're not pursuing the case on intent. There's a conflict between the application as approved, because that 3.64 number will result in a 3.65 or above product, and therefore the FDA spec that they've asked for approval for, they have the power to amend that. They've asked for it is in conflict with our patent. And Congress set up the Hatch-Waxman Act to resolve conflicts early between the exclusivity granted by the Patent Office and the right to sell a product granted by the FDA. If there are no further questions, I reserve my remaining time.
Mr. O'Quinn?
Thank you, Chief Judge Moore. May it please the Court, John O'Quinn on behalf of Eagle Pharmaceuticals. Par tries to make a simple case complicated because it cannot show infringement based on how the express specification of the ANDA defines the relevant aspects of the product, the district court's factual findings, and this court's precedents. The ANDA here facially defines a non-infringing product, and the district court also found on the facts that Eagle's product would in fact not infringe. That should be the end of the matter, and the district court's judgment should be affirmed. Now, to be clear, Par has never argued that Eagle's product will infringe if it complies with all of the ANDA's specifications. All of them. That's the release specification. That's the stability specification, which is a representation as to what the pH for the entire shelf life of the product should be. And the in-process specifications, which have the effect, as the district court found, of limiting what the product is that can actually be produced. And so,
Dr. Park agreed that there could be an upward drift of up to 0.07.
Chief Judge Moore, Dr. Park did not agree that there could be an upward drift. He agreed that there was some amount of variation in the post-optimization data that showed that, you know, sometimes it could be a little bit higher than where it was at release, and sometimes it could be a little bit lower than where it was at release. And the district court relied on that at appendix 21 in finding that as a factual matter that as Par's expert admitted, fluctuations were in the neighborhood of 0.05 pH units and generally around 3.5 to 3.52, and found factually that it follows that the pH measurements for Eagle's ANDA product would be between 3.45 and 3.57, not only at the time of their release, but over their shelf lives. He also found as a factual matter, this is at appendix 23.
I'm looking at paragraph 29, and am I wrong in seeing that the district court has made findings that there's a plus or minus 0.05 shift?
Well, I think what the district court, I'm sorry, you were looking at which paragraph, Your Honor?
29, on page 21. Par is correct that pH measurements for the tested batches varied over the course of the batch's life.
Correct.
And then he goes through and analyzes them, and he shows that, I think, I could be wrong, but I read this paragraph as the district court concluding that there can be up to, basically, there can be a 0.05 shift one way or the other, plus or minus.
Yeah, I think what the district court was doing, Chief Judge Moore, was finding that Par's expert admitted that these fluctuations compared to the fluctuations that existed in the pre-optimized process were only in the neighborhood of as much as 0.05 and what they were generally located around. And he just simply said that if you assume that Par's expert is right about that and treated it essentially as a concession, then that would mean that the actual product...
Wait a minute. You said these are pre-optimization. The paragraph said the pH fluctuations observed over the shelf life of the post-optimization batch.
No, that's what I was saying, that these were post-optimization and that they were only 0.05, which was less than the fluctuation that was observed with the pre-optimization batches.
Yes,
that was
but the... if you do sell a product at 3.64, which have you sought FDA approval to be able to sell a product at 3.64?
I think when you look at all of the specifications together, Chief Judge Moore, that the answer to that question is ultimately no. And there's the reasons for that is because all of the specifications work together to limit what the product is that can actually be produced. And so
you have not sought FDA approval to sell a product out of the gate at 3.64. Your client has not sought that approval.
So Chief Judge Moore, I don't dispute that the release specification is up to 3.6 and that rounding would be 3.64. What I am saying is that we also have sought approval for a product that will maintain a non-infringing pH for the entire life of the product,
right,
which is the stability spec, and more, even perhaps more significant.
So your client recognizes that it can't sell a product at 3.64 because there is some potential drift, and so you're saying we have sought FDA approval to sell a product where only if we can control the drift so that it doesn't go above 364. And so if that means we can't sell above 359, we're not selling above 359 because if there's a, you know, 0.05 potential drift. That's what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying that the client concedes that there is a drift, and again, particularly an upward drift, but I am saying that the client recognizes...
The district court seems to have found that there's a drift in your batches.
Well, the district court found that there could be variation. It's not... that he specifically rejected that it was necessarily an upward drift.
Right, and now, so, just see, can we look at page 20, appendix 29? Because, I don't know, maybe I'm reading stuff out of context, but... are these findings of the district court? Because he says, it is true that the product, blah, 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 and it is true a pH of 3.64 would meet that specification. But the release specification is not the only specification in Eagle's ANDA. And it is not accurate to say that Eagle seeks authority to release products into the marketplace with pH values up to 3.64. Rather, are you looking at that paragraph?
I am, and that is precisely my point, Judge Prost. That's precisely my point, is that all of the specifications, the release specification, the stability specification, and the in-process specification, which actually limit like what the pH can be just before release, all operate to limit not only a functional matter, but a legal matter, what the product is that actually can be produced and released. And these in-process specifications...
So what is it that you're seeking, that your client is seeking permission to actually release? Because according to the very sentence Judge Prost just read, it says it's not accurate to say that Eagle seeks authority to release products into the market with pH values up to 3.64. So theoretically, your ANDA asks for 3.64. The district court has made a finding that that's not accurate, that you are not seeking permission to release at 364. Is that correct?
Well, I think, Chief Judge Moore, that it really distills to this. We are seeking authority to release a product that complies with all of the specifications. That, in fact, in the FDA, in rejecting PAR citizen petition...
The district court made a fact finding. Eagle seeks authority. It's not accurate to say that Eagle seeks authority to release products into the market with a pH value up to 3.64. Is that correct or not? That's a finding of the district.
I think it is correct, Chief Judge Moore, because number one, with the in-process specifications that limit what the pH of the product can be just before release, we would not be able to release a product, would not have authority to then turn around and release a product at 3.64. It would be impossible. In addition,
district court went on to find you are seeking a limit. You are seeking authority to distribute products that have a pH of between 3.4 and 3.6 from the time of their release for distribution through the entirety of the product's shelf lives.
That's...
And referred to the pH specification and the stability pH specification.
That's exactly right, Judge Prost. And so it has to comply with all of them through their shelf life. And if that means that as a factual matter or as a practical matter that we cannot release at 3.64 because there is a risk that it might not satisfy the stability specification, then we have not sought authorization to do that.
Well, you say if. It's not an if. It's right here in black and white. It's not if that's what he said, if that's not what you're allowed. The district court made these findings about what you were allowed to do and what you weren't allowed to do, and it seemed like that was your position. You agreed with the district court.
I think we're in vigorous agreement here. I mean, at the end of the day, you have on its face an ANDA that defines a non-infringing product. And in Bayer versus Elon, this court was clear that even if there are factual issues as to whether the defendant can comply with the specification, they are not material factual issues because 331D prohibits the defendant from selling any product that doesn't meet the ANDA
along
specification.
Along those lines, your friend refers to two cases, the Abbott and the Tyco case. And can you... I'm assuming you think those are distinguishable from the facts here.
Yeah, I don't think that those cases are pertinent here, and I don't think that they change the analysis from the analysis that this court discussed in both Faring 1 and Faring 2, that you just look at the ANDA and how it's defined, and if the ANDA doesn't answer the question, then you look at the facts. Here, I think the district court did both. Either way, we're not infringing. And the way, in terms of Abbott, the Brahmanadine court at page 1378 specifically addressed the Abbott case and specifically said, look, that addresses a different issue, and it treated that language in Abbott as dicta. But then the court, and it was the same authoring judge in Tyco, addressed that issue again and identified that it was not unreasonable if you had an example for somebody to assert infringement, even though the ANDA on its face defined a non-infringing product, if the ANDA, if there were errors in the ANDA itself. In other words, if there were errors in the calculations of the ANDA itself. Now, there are no allegations here that there are errors in the ANDA. Their argument is not that we won't, that if we comply with...
What was the evidence you introduced in response to Mr. Parr's drift evidence? For example, does your client have any evidence that's in this record that yes, there is drift, but it's only at the 0.02, or it's what was your evidence regarding drift?
Yeah, Chief Judge Moore, I think all the data is all our data, and if you look at page 30 of the red brief, we've identified the difference in the variation that was seen in the post-optimization batches versus the pre-optimization batches. The top line that you see shows that there was significant variation in pre-optimization. And the reason for that is because it didn't require thorough mixing. And the process was changed. And this isn't just a statement to the court. This isn't just like a passing reference to the FDA.
Sorry, I guess I'm trying to... these don't help me that much. What, if any, drift does your client agree exists post-optimization?
Chief Judge Moore, I don't think that the evidence shows that there is drift in any particular direction. There is no trend
I didn't ask you if there was drift in a particular direction. I asked if there was drift.
Well, I think the drifts
are... Does the evidence show there's any drift?
I think that at most, the evidence shows that there could be variation of 0.05 after release. That what they're doing is they're just
simply
taking...
It could go up or down.
It could. There's a lot of, their infringement theory is based on a lot of ifs.
But if the evidence shows there can be up to 0.05 drift, and if you have represented that you will sell a product that will maintain an under 3.64 status for its entire shelf life, doesn't that mean you can't release a product that's at 3.59 unless you come up with a new and better optimization process that helps you further contain the drift?
Well, the optimization process that is part of the ANDA and the pH that it requires, which they admit at page 21 of their reply brief is binding, so it's not optional, requires that immediately before release that the pH be no more than 3.54. So you have an in-process specification.
Oh, so you're saying that the specification that you all have filed automatically limits your client to not releasing a product higher than a pH of 3.54?
Well, with some potential for variation from the post-filtration to the release step, but yes is the short answer, is that the final step before release is a stabilization step that was added based on what was found pre-optimization.
And so you're saying the ANDA that's being approved by the FDA limits your client, based on all of the different specifications, to not releasing a product above 3.54?
I'm not sure that it's that particular number. I'd point you to the district court's factual finding, or at least I think it's a factual finding, at page 23. Well, he says it is. He says, quote, "I find as a matter of fact that even if Eagle's..." This is Appendix 23. "Even if Eagle's ANDA product were not required as a matter of law to maintain the stability specification," and he has found that we are, whatever that means.
I'm sorry, then, I'm just not... What paragraph are you in?
It's Appendix
23. I don't see your even if statement, but I might be missing it.
I may be... maybe I have the wrong page. I apologize.
Because these are numbered paragraphs, so it would help if you... Help me hone in.
I'm sorry. It begins on the previous page, paragraph 31, at the bottom. And he says, I find, therefore, as a matter of fact, that even if Eagle's ANDA product were not required as a matter of law to maintain the stability pH specifications set forth in Eagle's ANDA, because Eagle will have to use the optimized manufacturing process it committed to the FDA, the product Eagle will manufacture and sell will not have a pH that would drift into the range of pH limitation claimed in the asserted patents. And they've conceded at page 21 of their reply brief that these in-process specifications, you know, they danced about this below and suggested, well, maybe this didn't really count. But it's actually in the ANDA itself. We represented to the FDA at appendix 2931 and 2955 that these steps were implemented to provide greater assurance that we would...
So are you basically saying you've committed to a process that even though the upper end of your range is the 364, it's that you're going to release a product that at most will drift to 364, but not released at 364 and go above that?
Absolutely, Judge Hughes. That's exactly right. And so I think there's no infringement under 271E because on its face, the ANDA defines a non-infringing product, and whether you can comply with the ANDA is a different question, as Bayer versus Elon makes clear. This is not
okay,
Sanovia.
Mr. O'Quinn, your time's up. Thank you very
okay,
much.
Thank you, Chief Judge Moore.
Mr. Black, Mr. Quinn went over by about a minute and a half, so we'll give you 2 minutes of rebuttal time. That should even out the time.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of clarifying points. The in-process specification is a test that they do while the product is being manufactured. The top end of that is 3.54. They ask for a release. They later, not much later, but they later do testing, and they have to meet the release spec, which is 3.6, which means 3.64. There was proof from Dr. Park, who was actually their expert, that there's evidence of drift of point up to 0.07 between in-process and actual release.
But the judge made, I haven't skimmed the whole record. I mean, I don't know, maybe some of your witnesses said something, but the district court was free to balance the testimony of the various sides to look at the data and to reach other conclusions. So I'm not sure pointing to something one of your witnesses said is dispositive of the issue before.
I'm only pointing to that one because it was in response to a comment he made about what the in-process spec means. And to Chief Judge Moore's question about what their witnesses said, these comments came from their witnesses. The key factual point we don't dispute, it's the one the district court made, which is that this product can go up or down 0.05 after release. So you asked a series of questions, Chief Judge Moore and Judge Hughes, about whether or not they intended to release at 3.59, which would preclude, under the factual findings of the district court, drift up into the infringing range. And we really didn't get an answer. And most importantly, we didn't get an answer in the district court. We did have an answer from Dr.
You did get an answer in the district court. You got an answer. They will not release a product that even after the drift takes it above 3.64. So you got your answer. And if they violate that, this is a DJ you're asking for. They're not actually doing anything wrong yet. So if they violate that, you can always run right back to court. And then on top of the fact that you have an infringement case, you'd also have a case against them for basically making misrepresentations to the court.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is Sanovian said that's not how we do ANDA cases, that a promise by them not to do something that's permissible under their ANDA is not sufficient.
It's not a promise by them to do something. Their ANDA does not permit it. Their ANDA requires both the release and the stability specifications be complied with. They understand that. So they can't release a product. It might be right now you've established or they've established there's an up to 0.05 drift. Perhaps they'll come up with a better optimization product that further reduces drift. So it's not the case that they're for all times limited to 3.59. They might be able to better stabilize that drug over time. They know it can't, during any point in its shelf life, go above 3.64. They've made representations to us and to the FDA to that extent. If they do it, boy, don't you have a great record to go back to the district court with?
We won't know until long after all the damage has been done. We don't have no access to their release specifications. We don't know what they're doing.
Can't you just test the products?
If we can play whack-a-mole with them in the marketplace. We can try to find them. We can test them. The drift takes place over a long period of time. That's not the way Hatch-Waxman is supposed to work. Congress said issues like this should be resolved. We should have had a judgment in the district court.
And it got resolved. They have a release specification and a stability specification. They have guaranteed the FDA for the entire shelf life this product won't exceed 364. I don't see how you can say that violates 271A. That's what they were granted permission for, a product that throughout its shelf life will not violate 364. Seems pretty straightforward.
Your Honor, thank you. We submit that we were entitled to below a finding of some sort under 271E or 271A to put into writing and make it a final judgment that they cannot release it above 359. Thank you.
Okay, I thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.